Hey, welcome to the Meat House. Jeff here.
And Chris here. How you doing?
It's weekend. I'm here with my buddy. We're having some drinks. We're talking about mead. It could not be a better way to spend an afternoon.
Yeah, I agree. Great thing to do. I truly miss it when I'm not doing this with you. You know, we've been friends for a long time, and I really enjoy talking with you, spending time with you, making new friends online. This is good.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is even the introvert that I am. I still enjoy like interacting with people in a limited sense online. Like, hey, I have this question. Hey, I might have that answer. So
I have the answer. And you know, I'm the shy one in my family. Okay, nobody ever buys that.
If only you could see the scathing expression that I just shot my friend here.
If my reaction is any indication, you know exactly the expression he gave me.
Your radio doesn't communicate anything, but his expression does communicate quite a lot.
Anyway.
You know, speaking of our listeners and friendly meeting people and things like that, we do need to thank everybody tuning in, listening at home. You guys are this is the
reason we want to do this.
Right. This makes this fun. Is getting to communicate with you guys, getting to share ideas, tell you our experiences, have you send in your experiences, ask us questions, just get the positive commentary and the, hey, yeah, I really like what you did on that show with, you know.
That thing.
Right, yeah. It warms my cold little heart to get to say, hey, you know, we're doing fun things. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry I got you involved in theater, because that just ruined your life.
You didn't get me involved in theater. You got me in Ren Faire. I was a theater kid from junior high. And let's be honest, I've always been kind of a dork, and the opportunity that you get into Ren Faire was, yeah, okay.
It wasn't a tough twist, I imagine.
So you get to, it's theater stuff, but you get to play with swords. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a hard sell. I said that.
No, it really wasn't. So yeah, guys, those of you listening at home, those of you sharing with your friends and, you know, helping us grow as a podcast, listening and tuning in every week, sending us comments, things like that. Thank you so much. Sincerely, that it means the world to us. The other group we need to thank, of course, Jake and his buddies over at Boxing Harlequin.
Boxing Harlequin, yeah. Love those guys. I mean, I recently asked them to order a bottle of black cherry vintner syrup for me because they were out. Mm-hmm. It didn't take long. They said, I'm about to put an order in. Thank you. And they called me when it came in.
Yeah.
Held it for me until I got there 2 days later. Awesome.
Yeah. No. What if you need it, if it's available in the marketplace, I'm willing to bet Jake could probably source that for you. Yeah. They have, you know, they have a regular stock of so many ingredients, whether it's, you know, wine or beer or cider or kombucha and cheese and stuff like that.
Yogurt. But
even then, you know, I know he's got contacts and he's got ways to get stuff that is a little more outside the box. If you're looking for, you know,
specific honey,
right? A key lime pie concentrate, maybe, possibly.
Yeah, I've never tried, but we can always ask.
Yeah.
And you can too.
I'm sure, you know, you come up with left field questions, he might have an answer.
The odds are pretty good, honestly.
Yeah.
And if you want to save a little money with it, you know, MHP10.
Right.
And you get 10% off your order online.
Their prices are already pretty competitive with all their competition out there. And the extra 10% is just icing on the cake for you guys.
And here's something you've never thought of before. I just thought about it. If you go there regularly, you can get a buyer's card to get, you know, build up to an additional discount.
Yeah. The, what do they call
it? Amp card.
Right. Yeah. I can never remember. Bacchus Bucks, I think, is what they call it for the longest time. And I don't know if that's still what they call it. But yeah, everybody has their little stamp card.
If I can find mine, I may not be able to find mine. It's mine. What did I do with it? I have no idea where mine is. I don't know where mine is. Anyway, but yeah, you can get your card stamp, and once you fill that card up, you get a coupon you can use for any purchase you need, mm-hmm, for a discount.
That's for people local to us in the Kansas City area. I mean, for you guys that are ordering online, use that 10% off code. Save yourself a little money. To be honest, I haven't had a stamp card since I stopped working there, because I have always got the little 10% friends and family discount
instead. Because you're family there.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. They've not really felt the need to give me the stamp card and make me earn that discount.
He's trying to talk me into getting a distiller to make Gibson. And he's a good salesman. Let me tell you, I'm thinking about pretty hard.
Yeah, no, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. But, yeah, and there's so many things happening there, and the information they give you is awesome. They want you to succeed. They're willing to hold your hand through your first success.
And you know what we've never talked about?
Hmm.
Customer appreciation events.
Oh, my gosh. They have that on about once a month on a Sunday.
Once a month on a Sunday. And so it's a little hit or miss whether I'm going to be able to make it in the first place because I've got, you know, regular Sunday stuff going on a lot of the time. And sometimes it coincides with customer appreciation, but they are so much fun.
Well, they are incredible. I mean, all of us get together. We bring mead or wine or beer or whatever we've made, and we share and we talk and we share information and we help each other out.
Yeah, you have a little buzzy conversation with maybe, I've seen as many as like 30 or 40 people get in there at a time.
Yeah, I've never seen less than 12, 15.
Right, yeah, it's a really well-populated event. There's some regulars, there's some new people coming through. It's always a lot of fun.
And honestly, they had theirs a couple of weeks ago on a Sunday.
Yes, I'm sad I missed that. I think I was out of town for that one.
So was I.
Yeah, no, I keep being disappointed with myself for missing those when I do. Always a lot of fun. If you're anywhere near the Kansas City area or it's a comfortable drive to make it down here, those are worth looking into too.
Totally.
Anyway, let's get on to the topic of the day. You know, we were talking a few weeks back about our 12% mead recipe. And
And if you start your 12%, awesome. I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing what you have to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
12%, a 12% traditional does not taste the same as an 8% traditional.
No, it doesn't.
And you're going to find that out. I used to think it doesn't. The taste doesn't matter. The percentage of alcohol doesn't matter. The taste. Oh, was I wrong? Oh my gosh, am I wrong?
And speaking of strength battering,
yes.
Let's talk about our meat of the day. This is another one that you had gotten from. The thirds, I guess, from the Valkyrie's Horn.
Yeah.
So we don't know who made this. We just know that this is a semi-sweet mel, blueberries, honey, and K1V116 with oak chips and cinnamon. This is a still medium sac mead.
Sac mead means it's over 14%, 14% or above. So if you remember last week, we had a magnificent blackberry, lime, cherry mead. I wanted more blackberry, but it was really good. But it was also 14%, so
boys, it was enough.
We were good
for an hour's recording time. Whoa! I launched a cap.
And well, I guess you just have to finish the bottle now.
We'll survive.
But this is also 14 or better, so we're going to get hurt a little bit again. So well, you know the things we go through for our fans and us.
So our pain, your entertainment.
Yeah. It is a deep purple.
Yep. If you hold it up to the light, you get a little red and purplish. You know, tilt it on an edge, it's a lot more purple looking.
This is purple.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I get a lot of blueberry.
Oh, they were generous with the blueberry on this
one. There's definitely some cinnamon in there.
Oh, man.
And it definitely tastes sweet, yeah.
I wish my blueberry cinnamon was this rich in smell.
It wouldn't surprise me if this was a mostly or no water blueberry kind of thing. Or they just took it.
Oh, wow. That taste hits you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first thing I got was cinnamon. But
That is not semi-sweet, though. That presents as dry.
Yeah.
Really.
There's so much cinnamon flavor in there. It presents dry.
Mm-hmm. And it's very tannic as well between the cinnamon and the blueberry skin. Again, it wouldn't be surprised if this was a lot of blueberry mass going into this.
It's a very strong wine. It kind of reminds me of a dark red wine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
totally. The tannic character of it, especially the aftertaste, it has that lingering quality that you see with like a Cabernet or a...
Merlot?
You know, we were just talking about Merlot between shows, but yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, but you know, it's solid, don't get me wrong. I mean, this is good.
Yeah, this is...
I'd appreciate a little more blueberry flavor in it. The cinnamon presents first.
This might shock you. I would like this a little sweeter.
Who are you? What have you done with my buddy?
So, this is labeled as a semi-sweet. This does not present as sweet to me.
No, even to me, this presents dry.
And the fact is, there is a lot of blueberry flavor in this. And one of the things we will talk about, I think, in today's show, is that if you take the sweet out of the fruit, it doesn't taste like the fruit.
No, it doesn't. And this is something I learned recently.
Yeah.
And a little bit in the past.
I think if they just backswing this a little bit more, we would get a lot more of that blueberry fruit character out of this.
Which I would love to have.
Yeah, this does not present as strongly blueberry as it most certainly is.
Yeah. But, Mo, whoever made this one, kudos. Not mad at you, just I like a little more sweet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we will always have some kind of criticism. Even the professional meads we drink, we may say, oh, I would like a little bit more blackberry, for example, from last week.
Yeah.
But
is it an enjoyable mead?
Absolutely. I will still finish my glass and
so will I.
Yeah. May even pop it up.
Yeah, there may be a little bit more coming out of that bottle. Okay.
Although it's a sack mead, so for sure if we can avoid slurring through our conversation here.
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway,
hey, Krish.
Yeah.
Hey, Krish.
Where?
I forgot.
Okay.
Anyway.
So here we go. Now, we're talking about refining recipes.
Well, we're talking about refining recipes. We're talking about adding fruit to mead. You know, when we were talking about the 12%, as opposed to the 8%, one of the things that we really harped on for the length of that episode was that there are new techniques here. There are new things to do. And I think in addition to, hey, this is just a little bit more complicated, this is a different way of approaching the topic of making mead that refines people's techniques. Now we're getting into, well, we refine our recipes. We're getting into, hey, there are different ways to add whole fruit to a mead too. And I think that's a great thing to talk about first, is just the topic of adding whole fruit. And we talked in episodes before about
syrups, concentrates.
Yeah, all kinds of different cheat codes and like dried fruit and stuff like that you can use to great effect. But part of mead making is just adding
just the fruit.
Right.
Now, mind you, I've done wild plum, which I pitted every freaking one of those 10 pounds of wild plums. It's about ready for me to sweeten in bottle.
Have you given it a little sippy sip?
I have. It is pretty darn dry, but the fruit is very forward, and the tannin is fine.
I'm intrigued. I will look forward to tasting that one, too.
Yeah, and I'll be glad, again, I'll be glad to bring some more for us, because I love sharing stuff with you. But using actual fruit is a different game than using your concentrates or your syrups or anything like that. When you're using your concentrates and your syrups like that, you're dealing with a fairly sterile, ready-to-use liquid.
Right.
And once you get into actual fruit, one, there's a few things you need to do. One, you need to freeze it. In my opinion, if you do not freeze your fruit solid and then deal with it from there, you're doing a disservice to yourself. Freezing it breaks down the cellular walls of all the fruit and lets all the sugars, as many of the sugars you can get out. Another thing you can do, I usually do, I'll mash it, blend it, puree it, something.
Right. Mashing and kind of the, you know, I like to do the three freeze-thaw-squish, rather than like doing a blending or a pureeing with mechanical stuff like a blender or a food
processor. I use a stick blender.
The thing I try to avoid is getting seeds into that.
Like I said, I took all the seeds out by hand. Seeds are your problem because seeds have things you don't want.
They can contain tannins, which can be nice. They also have a tendency to contain a bunch of other, like...
arsenic?
If you are using enough, like, cherries or apples that you have an issue with arsenic or the cyanide and kind of things like that.
You're using a lot.
I want to try that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fruit.
That's a lot. But the point is, there's a lot of things in the seeds you simply don't want as a flavoring.
Mm-hmm. You can get weird things like woody flavors or the green vegetal flavors. Like, you don't want your meat to taste like green pepper.
Yeah.
A fresh green pepper is delightful, sauteed and put on some pasta. It's not great
for the sandwich. That's great. Yeah. But it's not good for your meat. So you take your seeds out as best you can. Things like blueberries or strawberries, you can't.
Yeah. No, it's generally, again, freeze it, thaw it, give it a little squish, squish, squish in the bag, freeze it again, thaw it again, squish, 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 squish. That's pretty good to go.
Yeah.
Usually after that, what I like to do is add some kind of an enzyme, whether it's peccic enzyme or one of the other like proprietary enzymes we talked about. It's not fermentus, Lalzyme, KV, or the the other one, whether I'm using a darker fruit or a lighter fruit,
yeah,
I'll throw one of the two of those on there generally, just because that helps further break down those cell walls that the freezing started mm-hmm. breaking down. And it gets that juice to the point where the yeast can get in there and use it.
Yeah.
The idea is you want to separate as much of the good stuff from the crap that's going to settle on the bottom anyway.
Yeah. And the more you can get into that, or you get to your mix, honest to goodness, better. Now, nothing you're going to do when you use real fruit, we've said this before, use a bag.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
For goodness sake. I mean, when I did my semi-famous banana, I used a bag. For my pomegranate, I used juice with some pomegranate. And I did not use a bag. That was a mistake.
The first time I did a strawberry, no bag.
No bag. Oh, my God.
That was a gross mess at the bottom of that bucket.
Oh, my God. And use a bag. You know, save yourself so much heartache and work.
And headache, and yeah, no, yeah.
Use a bag, so when it's done, you take the bag out, you squeeze it, give it a squeeze, and get what you want out of it, and throw it away.
Those bags make your life so much easier. Yeah, no, that's all the more we need to say about it.
Yeah, and if you could see our face right now, you'd see us going, yeah.
There's a little trauma there, a little history of trauma.
But another thing you know is, like Jeff said earlier, fruits without sugar. In some cases, don't taste like fruit.
They don't taste right.
They don't taste much at all in some cases.
Right.
If you used a watermelon puree in a mead, you have a traditional. If you taste watermelon, I'll be impressed. It means you're probably a super taster because it's just mostly water. Strawberries the same way. I've told in an episode way back in time, we talked about my chocolate strawberry that I had to add freeze-dried strawberries and a massive amount of freeze-dried strawberries to get the strawberry flavor in it. So, strawberries, any kind of the melons, cantaloupe, yeah. Watermelon.
Oh, for sure.
Any of those. There's just so little flavor and so much water, you're not going to get that flavor.
You know, there is, I can't remember if it's, I believe it's in Steve Piazza's book. He has a chart from the USDA as far as like the water composition of different fruits and vegetables and things like that. The higher water composition, so again, strawberries, watermelons, melons in general, the more of that fruit you're going to need for it to show up and be an appreciable sense, especially if you're putting it in primary.
Yeah.
That said, maybe we won't necessarily put it in primary. A little teaser for what we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're putting together a recipe for this stuff. Generally, the more water you have in that fruit content, you can look this up online too. I'm sure the USDA or other resources have similar like water content per fruit kind of guidelines.
But you know, well, think about it. A strawberry, when you eat a ripe strawberry, you taste a very sweet fruit.
Mm-hmm.
You take that sweet away, even mentally, try to think what it tastes like without sweet. It's hard.
Yeah, it doesn't. There's not a lot outside of that sweet, and everything you can think of outside of that sweet is still connected to the sweet, if it makes sense.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, the parts of our brain that handle like taste and flavor are not like the outside wrinkly bits that we talk about, like when we're talking about brains that do like all the complex thought. They're like that lizard brain part in the very, very depth of your brain that is not very well connected to like rational things. So when we say, hey, this mead has notes of baking spices from the oak, it's not because the oak has, you know, vanilla and nutmeg in it. It just reminds us of it in a kind of a weird mental way that just like that lizard part of your brain connects to some part of your monkey brain that goes, oh yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah. And when I say now, but now think of eat a strawberry, they eat a dark cherry, like a bean cherry.
Mm-hmm.
The flavor of a cherry is pronounced in comparison.
Right.
That's why cherry meads are very popular. Blueberry meads are very popular. Raspberry meads are very popular.
Blackberry
meads are incredibly popular, mm-hmm. and even with me, that's my favorite. But think about that. So if you're going to put a primary in, make it a strong flavored fruit. For example, any of the ones I just mentioned.
Yeah. Anything that you would generally buy as a berry, apart from strawberry, really, mm-hmm. You can probably get away with. And you could probably get away with just a couple pounds in primary of that fruit.
Per gallon.
Per gallon. Yes. Thank you.
If you're doing multiple gallons, you need to up your berry.
Well, of course, yes. Raspberries, from what I've been told, you can get away with like half a pound of those per gallon.
Really?
Because some of those can be very, very tart. But I'm of a persuasion that I kind of like an acidic mead, so I might go a full pound per gallon. And
yeah,
that's one of those things that you must refine your recipe, as we will talk about.
Yeah. Speaking of that, refining recipe. So let's start out. You're going to make the 8 or 12%. It doesn't matter which one you pick.
Right.
If you don't have the recipe, you can get it on our website, themeathouse.com, and it's there. Add, if you're doing a gallon, a conservative pound to pound and a half of fruit, depending on what you use. Cherry, raspberry, blueberry, and blackberry. You can get a pound and a half, you'll probably be okay.
Yeah. You could go up to two, but a pound and a half, I think, is a nice middle ground starting point.
Yeah. For something really, really intense,
more.
If you have a really intense berry, you don't want that intense of a thing, less. This is something you're going to have to experiment on. I cannot give you a definitive amount, even if you gave me the absolute fruit you wanted to eat, simply because I'm not you.
Right. Part of this is to taste. Part of this is just the quality of the ingredients. Even if, you know, realistically, when I talk about using whole fruit in a mead, I'm a little bit of a cheapskate. Where do I source my whole fruit? Costco.
Farmers markets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The blackberries that I can get at the farmer's market this week, they're not going to taste the same as the stuff I can get in a month.
Yeah.
It's
a different crop. Or even in the season.
Right. It's a different crop. It could be imported from a different country entirely, for all we know. Some of them are coming from Mexico. Some of them are coming from California. Some of them are coming from Guatemala, for all I know.
We have no idea where they came from. The point is, take a bite. Decide what you need to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And are you going to be good at this? No. I've done this for several years. I'm not good at it. You know, you're probably not, unless you are really, really good at estimations in a way I cannot figure out, it's going to take some practice.
Yes. I've been making meat for a very long time, but I've been cheating at fruit meats for a very long time, too. When I do fruit meats, I don't do just plain fruit meats generally that much. Generally, what I will do is fruit and spice, or more often than not, spice or braggot or something else. The fruit meats are not necessarily intimidating, but they're not exactly the most exciting to me either. So I don't.
I do a lot of fruit meats. I do some with fruit and spice, but I do a lot of fruit meats. Yeah. I've gotten pretty good reviews. I'm pretty good. But the point is, I really overestimate my fruit levels.
Mm-hmm. So there, another thing we can talk about when it comes to adding fruit, though, is when in the process you're adding the fruit. We just talked about, you know, when you're putting strawberries or watermelon or whatever in primary, not to expect very much of that flavor to come out when in the finished product. What if we put that into secondary?
You're going to get more, and you get more fresh fruit flavor.
Right. The fruit flavor is more pronounced, more recognizable, I guess to say.
Now, define secondary for people who don't know what we're talking about here.
So secondary is generally between a few weeks and a month, month and a half into the fermentation process. Most of the simple to digest sugars have been digested at this point. I don't want to give a firm like percentage of your starting gravity that you should be at.
But most of your sugars should be gone.
Right. The simple sugars are gone. The more complex sugars and the byproducts of fermentation are still what the yeast are chewing on. There is still active yeast in the fermentation process. But if you look at your airlock, it's probably not very active at this point. You may have developed a layer of yeast detritus and other crud that you need to rack off of. And that's generally, that forming layer is my indication that, hey, it's time to secondary.
Okay, now my secondary is, once I get to that point, I will rack it off into a fresh bucket,
mm-hmm.
getting rid of that rice cake, that yeast cake at the bottom that's there that I don't want in the first place, and the finished product, and make it a cleaner batch overall. That's what I call my secondary, because I put it in a second barrel.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what the scientific name or the industry name of that is, but when it's done enough work that I put it in a second barrel, I call it secondary.
I think that's probably where that term came from.
Yeah,
okay. TBH. But we can put fruit into secondary instead of primary, and you will get a little bit more of the fresh fruit flavor that way. What are we missing when we're not putting it into primary, though?
You're not getting the fermentation, the primary fermentation of what?
I'm pointing at the mead we're drinking because it's so friggin' tannic.
Yeah, tannic. You're not getting the fruit flavor. The primary is going to destroy a lot of your fruit flavor.
Primary takes a lot of the fruit flavor because it takes a lot of the sugars out of the fruit. But you get the biotransformation action from the yeast acting on the different parts of the fruit, especially, like in this case, you can tell blueberries were added in Primary because there is a ton of active tannin in the mead itself that has been, the yeast have worked on that, and the tannins have bound to different parts of the mead to stay in situ here.
You know, but by the same time, we also told you how to get that flavor back. Add sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And the sugar per se doesn't matter. This is a mead. I add honey. Right.
Now, adding in secondary, the yeast could still take the sugars in that fruit and run with it and dry it out. It could still very much happen, especially if you're using, you know, let's say you're either using the Mead House 8 or 12% recipe, and you decide to throw in K1V116, which has a cap out of 18.
That's a powerful yeast.
Right.
If you get an 18% mead, we're drinking a 14% now. We were drinking a 14% last episode. This stuff hurts. This can hurt you quick.
Even if you start with a 12% and you add extra fruit into secondary to get the fruit flavor, you could easily dry that out a second time and end up with something in the neighborhood of 14 to 15%, realistically.
Yeah. I'm talking about adding honey at the end when you're back sweetening after the yeast is gone.
Yes.
I should have made that clear. That's my fault. But you can get the flavor of the fruit back at the very end by adding some sugar to bring up that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Sugar or honey or more fruit.
Or more fruit.
You can stabilize and add, in this case, a bag is even more important. And it's maybe like a fine bag, really, because at this point, you want the fruit and maybe a little bit of the skins for some tannin. You're not going to get as much tannin out of this just sitting there for probably a day or two as you would for putting it in primary.
Maybe for a month or two.
You know, you're using fresh fruit. You might as well do the thing, right?
Yeah.
And oak is generally a better way to get tannin at this point anyway, but you could take fresh fruit and basically get it into a mash in a fine bag, stick it in there, and get some very fresh fruit flavor to finish it off. It's a possibility. It seems like a lot of work.
But you can do it.
Yeah.
But, it's not, okay, if you're going to make yourself a good mead, do the work. Okay, this is a hobby, but honestly, I've worked hard at my hobbies than I ever did any job I've ever had. I'll be blunt.
A labor of love is still a labor, but it's a labor of love for a reason.
Yeah. So, but, you know, that's a great way to do that. Comma. Secondary is going to get you more of the fresh fruit flavor in your mead.
Right.
Another way you can do this is after you kill the yeast.
Right. We were just talking about
basically
the step between stabilizing and clearing or bottling.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. You will get a lot more of that fresh fruit flavor because it will be true flavor. The problem here, though, is that if you're adding a juicy, like, you know, pound or two of blackberries per gallon at this point, you're diluting that meat.
Yeah. It's now the alcohol level is going down.
And if
not significantly, mind you, it won't do a lot, but it will.
Granted, if we're following the 8% or the 12% recipe and we're adding, you know, a couple pounds per gallon of fresh fruit, the dilution is not going to be in the danger zone level. If we were doing a 5%,
then you're looking at something different.
A few pounds per gallon of fresh fruit juice, we might be in the level where the alcohol by itself was not enough to preserve and could allow for, you know,
spoilage.
Yeah, acetobacter or something else to come in there and hang out and turn us into some very expensive and...
And that's why I keep my meads above 12%, 10-12%. It's usually that or above.
Generally above 5 to 6 from what I've been given to understand is plenty, but yeah.
I'm overzealous. I'm very enthusiastic, and the minimums are not good enough for me.
There's a reason I rarely go below 7 for my own personal use. And that, and, you know, if I'm going to drink something, I do want to
drink
something.
Yeah. You know? It's not like we're lush or anything, but good grief, I'm not drinking fruit juice.
And this is not the Miller Lite that you want to drink while you're mowing the lawn or something. You know?
Yeah.
We're sitting down to have a little religion here, so to speak. Yeah.
We are not active when we're doing this cast. We are sitting here drinking mead. Anyway, but that's a sometimes you can do. Now, again, fruit, doing a whole fruit mead, has a lot of veg. You have tannin from your skin. You have actual fruit flavor in it, and you'll get more of it. And as we said, where you put it in, and you'd always do more of it as the progression keeps going. What are some of the dangers here?
So, another thing that I really like about your philosophy of always freezing is that freezing will not kill all of the external pathogens on the fruit, but it will kill most of them. And it's going to, most of them is generally most enough, especially if you're putting them into an active culinary in primary or secondary that already has plenty of yeast already doing their thing. It's going to have a hard time getting a foothold anywhere else.
Yeah.
But the outside contact of the outside contact, the outside skin of that fruit is in contact in its growing region or greenhouse or wherever the hell it is produced with all kinds of yeast, natural wild yeast and mold and fungus and bacteria and protozoa. And
the list goes on. And the fact of the matter is, washing the skin of your fruit is not enough.
No.
It flat out isn't. You can, I encourage it. I always wash my fruit. Mm-hmm. But freezing it will help considerably.
Right.
Is there a risk? Yes.
There's still a small risk.
There's a small risk, but
you're not going to get away from it.
No. But that's kind of the nature of the beast. You know, no hobby like this is without risk.
Right. And you could conceivably do something different. Like maybe you could do a really quick blanch of blueberries or blackberries or something like that if you were using them whole and not mashed up and frozen.
Maybe. That would lower your odds even more. But the point is, raw fruit carries the risk of other pathogens.
Right.
Now, the risk is, like you said, low.
Another thing you can consider, especially if you're doing it in primary, or you're taking the step of adding, like, Lyozyme or things like that to break down the whole fruit into more juicy stuff, is to use our old buddy potassium sulfite.
Yeah.
In the form of either the powder itself or the Camden tablets. If you remember, this is part of the 1-2 punch, and this is one of the 1-2 punches that works whether it's yeast cells or other wild yeast or fungus and things like that, because what this does is this prevents those cells from budding, from splitting off and making new cells. So this cuts that reproductive part real fast.
Potassium bisulfite is no joke. It's great stuff to use both to kill your yeast and to get things ready.
So if you've got, whether you're, you know, getting fresh apple juice from the press, or you've got an entire 7-gallon bucket full of blueberries floating in some Lyozyme,
metabisulfite. 10 gallons I get from a couple of farms. Here, try this. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, if you're floating it in your enzymes and things like that to help break it down, a little metabisulfite will give you guys the time advantage. And the trick here is just remember, give it 24 to 36 hours, ideally a full 36 hours, after you've dosed it with the metabisulfite before you pitch your yeast. Otherwise, your yeast is going to be affected by that too.
Yeah. You know, patience is the game here. We're not doing it fast anything. Well, there are faster. We can talk about those later on.
Right. We've talked about those kind of ad nauseum a few different times. But
you this is a patience game. I've said before, you need to be a little bit OCD and very patient.
Well, and the other advantage I think you can get from using whole fruit as opposed to the different juices and things like that is that you think about it. We talked, I think it was last week, you mentioned there are, what, 250,000 different kinds of fruit?
Yeah.
How many different kinds of varietals of blackberries are there?
Raspberries.
Bunch. Yeah. And when you go to the supermarket, and I go to Costco and I bulk buy a 4-pound bag of frozen blackberries, they don't even tell me what kind that is.
And they're unlikely to do so.
Right. But it's probably going to be one of a couple different very similar strains that are going to produce very similar fruit consistently in great quantities, because that's the name of the game of factory farming. But if you're looking for a specific varietal of fruit or a weird kind of fruit, like let's say I want to make a gooseberry mead.
Yeah.
You can't go get gooseberries at Costco.
You can't get them in your supermarket more than likely.
Right. Your options are kind of limited. You're going to have to find a special supplier online you can buy them from, or you're going to have to grow them.
Or a farmer's market that does that, and that's right. Even those are rare.
It really depends on what part of the country you're from. I think, you know, those of our listeners in Minnesota may have an easier time getting gooseberries, for example, because I think they grow up there a little easier than they do in this climate.
Yeah. The point is...
But that's just an example.
Yeah, there you and go.
Your options are significantly wider if you can source, you know, fresh fruit. Again, we were talking God, what was that, 4 or 5 weeks ago now, about quinces?
Yeah.
And how you can get those here. I don't know where you would order them otherwise.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, if you want, okay, I'm a gardener, and I'm going to jump in here. If you want consistent berries for your mead, grow them. It's not that hard, I swear. Get whatever it is, a blueberry, blackberry, boysenberry, gooseberry, whatever, you know, snozzberry, whatever. Yeah, thank you, Willy Wonka. Anyway, grow it. And I do a container garden. I have large buckets, and I go to a guy who has already started, you know, sprouts and plants ready to go. And he will get, he will say, here's this for this much. And I buy them, and I put them in a container, and I get them from an all-natural farm with very minimal pesticide, if any.
Mm-hmm.
And I grow them myself. Is it a hassle? Absolutely. But you're going to get the same thing. And I'll tell you who does this on a level that defies my understanding. Ken Schwamm, the godfather of the book.
And Schramm.
Schramm. Yeah. I've been saying his name wrong since I got the book. Ken Schramm grows his own berries for his Heart of Darkness mead.
For all of his meads.
For all of his meads. Okay, I didn't know that. I thought it was just Heart of Darkness. But he has very specific bushes. He gets all those things to make his meads. And they are remarkably consistent because he's the one controlling that. The honey, I don't know if he has his own honey.
I'm not sure either.
But the point is, I'm not worried about the honey as my flavor if I'm making a fruit melomel.
Well, and, you know, any Ken Schramm mead that I've tasted, by the way, to all of you that have brought Schramm's meads to mead tastings at different competitions where I got to try those, thank you.
I haven't done that yet. I'm kind of insulted now.
You had the opportunity at more than one Valkyrie's Horn to try Schramm's mead, so that's on you.
I did?
Yeah, they were both at mead. They were at both mead tastings we went to together.
That I probably tasted. I just don't remember now because there was a lot of mead.
I'm going to tell you, though. Schramm's meads, or fruit bombs. I don't think the honey matters.
But the point is, if you have a little space, you don't need a lot. If you have a balcony, if you're in an apartment, you can actually do this.
Almost every kind of variety of berry out there, they have different, like, little varietals that are totally grown for container gardens. Yeah.
Yeah. Do it. I mean, first of all, you're going to love the results. A few episodes ago, I talked about the Queensmead that has rosebriar leaves. I'm now starting to grow a rosebriar plant because I want the mead. Not because I want the rosebriar plant. if you want to control it at that level, I encourage it. Because I do it a little bit myself. I mean, I'm not going to be, you know, once upon a time, Jeff grew hops.
Yeah. It didn't grow very well, but I tried. And you know what I do grow? Spices.
Yeah.
I've got, both for me and for culinary purposes, as me this year, I've got some oregano, I've got some lavender, I've got some very, very nice lemon thyme that I love using for cooking, and we'll probably figure out.
You need rosemary?
Rosemary, obviously. Mm-hmm. A little cilantro, even though it tastes like soap to me, I still get some for my wife.
You're that one half. You're the half of people.
22%,
but yes. Okay.
Yeah.
You're that category of people.
Yeah.
I love cilantro. It does not taste like soap to me, but, you know, I didn't make that cut.
You know, we can talk about this in terms of refining recipes, though.
Yeah.
That's kind of the other half of this equation is, you know, once we get into, like we were talking about last week, I as a mead maker, you as a mead maker, we want to have a few different recipes that are just consistently available. Mm-hmm. If we get to down to like half a case, okay, well, it's time to make more cherry.
Yeah.
You know, I want my meads to be consistent, but I want them to be an improvement because there's going to be differences batch to batch. We understand this. We accept this.
But our ultimate goal is to make a better mead.
Right.
Every batch.
Every time. And so, you know, like we were talking about just now, cilantro, right? What's the seed of cilantro?
Coriander.
Coriander.
Yeah. Coriander.
There you go. Coriander is actually one of the two, like, ancillary spice ingredients for the braggot that I adore having on tap. Wit braggot.
Okay.
Belgian wit. It's a light wheat beer with orange and coriander notes.
But you like it.
I adore it, even though coriander tastes like soap to me.
But by the same token, you know, some things I use in my finishing are made from shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
shrimp casings and such like that. I'm horribly allergic to shrimp. That doesn't affect me after fermentation.
Right. I'm kind of sort of allergic. It makes my tummy upset, but it's not going to kill me.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be able to breathe. So
yeah,
well, I've good. Never had a reaction either way. But, so with this wit, the second time I tried making it, I had some friends over for D&D or something like that. And I tasted this wit, and I was like, oh, God, I overdid it on coriander, didn't I? Jesus. And I served it anyway. I was like, okay, well, you know, if you guys want this, it's not the best thing I've ever made, but you can try this. And a couple of them were like, oh, my God, this is so good.
Yeah, but like I said earlier, I'm not you. You can make it for you. You make it for you.
Right. And here's the thing, though. There's a commonly available variety of wheat beer on the market. It's basically gone mass market now.
Okay. What is it?
Blue Moon?
Okay, I know Blue Moon.
Yeah.
Blue Moon, I know that one.
Yeah, it's a wit style beer. It's mass marketed because is it Michelob or Old Milwaukee? I forget who, but one of those big beer companies actually like owns Blue Moon as a sideline kind of thing. Blue Moon does not use coriander.
What do they use?
Grains of Paradise.
I've got those in my spice cabinet.
So do I. And so here's the thing. You know, my whip beer that I adore, that I've made probably 4 times now and loved every recipe, even though every one of them was a little bit different. I want to make a little tweak this time, the next time I make that. And I'm going to use Grains of Paradise instead of coriander.
See if you like it better.
Right. That's just the kind of little tweak we can make. We can take those tweaks even finer, though. Let's talk about, like, you know, we've got a blackberry mead that we made with whole blackberries. The ratio of fruit to mead, so to speak, or fruit within a mead, you know, let's tweak that a little bit. Do we like 2 pounds of blackberries versus 2.5 pounds of blackberries versus 1.75 pounds of blackberries? Where do we get that?
What's our level?
Yeah. What's our ideal here? And you, again, this is to taste. This is honestly the best way to do this is probably to judge you yourself, and then like grab 2 or 3 of your closest friends that are, you know, hanging out
that might be willing to try mead with you. I've never run out.
The people that are coming over consistently and drinking your mead anyway will probably happily give you some thoughts and ideas, you know. Does this need more blackberry? Does this need less blackberry? And you can do small tweaks every time. I think that is the way to really approach these house recipes, so to speak, and really make them your own, make them unique to you. The other thing that I love doing is adding little tertiary flavors. And maybe it's as simple as, you know, we've got a blackberry vanilla. Let's add 1/2 ounce of lemon zest.
Yeah. And now one thing I want to bring up to you, when you want to tweak your recipe, when you want to look into refining your recipe, what do you want? What do you want out of it? Do you want it more sweet? Do you want it more sour? Do you want more tannin? Do you want, what do you want more of, less of? Right. And that's where you're going to focus. Over time, you'll get better and better at this. My first batch of blackberry vanilla mead was good. It does not hold a candle to 5 generations later. Is it still good? It is still good. What I make now is much better, and yours will be too. But I'm also in a constant state of how can I improve?
Mm-hmm. These little tweaks, I think, are really telling because you can, as usual, the thing we have said so many times before and will continue to harp on so many times after, take good notes.
Yeah. Notes are your, what's your foundation for, this is what I did. This is the result I got.
Mm-hmm. We're going to tweak the amount of blackberry we put in this. Okay. Well, I liked this better. This was more fruit forward. This was more tannic. This was more, you know, this gave me a little bit more rounded sweetness versus the sharp sweetness I got from back sweetening with honey.
What actually, my next batch of blackberry vanilla I'm making, I'm going to have 18% more blackberry in it than the last batch.
Good. Okay.
I want to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. That's not an unconsiderable amount of blackberry extra.
Yeah. I mean, well, actually what I'm doing is instead of making a 7-gallon batch, I'm making a 5-gallon batch of it with the same amount.
Okay. There you go.
So it's about 18% difference.
Double the tracks, yeah.
And so I'm going to see what that does because I'm never going to be, I'll never achieve the perfect mead. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to get close to the perfect mead for me.
Right.
And that's what everybody should do. If I can try these other things like my banana fluffer nutter or my dragon fruit and all that, sure, I'm going to do those things too. It's fun.
You know, we have talked about the kind of the existential hell of not taking notes and making perfect meat and not being able to recreate it.
Oh my gosh.
I think there is a secondary existential hell to me in my mind of making the perfect meat and being able to recreate it perfectly. And my friends just come over, hey, I want perfect meat, please.
That'd be cool.
And I'm just stuck. It's cool for a little while that you can make the perfect mead, but then all your friends ever want to drink is the perfect mead over and over again. And you are stuck in an existential hell of just being the guy that makes the perfect mead and doesn't get to try anything different or fun or weird.
No, that's not going to happen with me.
That's so much of the fun of this hobby is just the weird stuff we can get up to.
And you know? I'll tell you, even my utter, complete, total, oh my God, failures.
At least you learned something, right?
Well, not just that words. I mean, I actually had fun doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I mean, oh my God, why am I crying as I pour this out? Because I messed up so badly, I can't drink it. I had fun trying. I really did. It took me months to get to that point again, but
it's kind of like, you know, in Little League as a kid, you go out and sometimes, like, you think you're going to hit a home run and that little jerk in the outfield grabs it at the last second when you're three quarters or more to the way to the first base and the bases were already loaded. And then he's throwing it to home. Like, oh my God, you thought it was going to be so good. And then it just turned to crap real fast. You're still having fun doing it.
You're still playing the game, man.
Yeah.
So
you're out there enjoying your time.
So let's talk about making your first fruit meat. We talked about the reasons you can do it.
Yeah.
We talked about how much fruit to put in, but what kind of fruits should we start with? I mean, I'm talking like blackberry, cherry, blueberry, raspberry, because those are the most common commercial meads you're going
to
find.
And I think those are also the common, easiest to find in the frozen fruit section at most supermarkets and Costco, Sam's Club, kind of those big box stores. I think those are a great place to start because it's already frozen for you. It's picked. Another reason to like frozen fruit is because it's picked at the peak of ripeness, so it's got all that, like,
and frozen really quick,
locked in, right? Use a basic fruit. Use a pre-frozen fruit that you can get in a good quantity.
Fruits I recommend is all the melons and strawberry. I don't recommend these. These are the ones I do not recommend you starting with, because you're looking for a little bit of disappointment in the flavor because you're not going to get a treat.
Right. You know, another on my list of things to brew. The Ethnic Enrichment Festival, every like late August around here, they have, it's a great little Kansas City event over in Swope Park, kind of by the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
All these different like ethnic clubs from all these different countries have their little booths out and they have different like food and drink. And like, I will go out there in the middle of like the late August sun. Usually it's my birthday weekend when we go out there. So it's just a family thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we will get, you know, Thai curry and Jamaican jerk chicken and, oh, we're all over the place. We'll get like the Japanese matcha, not matcha, mochi ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
Balls, like 30, 40 different booths. We'll try as much food as we can. Me and the kid and the wife will share these little single entree things as much as we can. Last year,
until you crawl home,
basically, or roll through a field back to the car where we have to go, oh, I'm so stuffed.
And yeah, bubble tea.
I can't remember if it's Vietnam or Cambodia or maybe it was Polynesia, a Polynesian country like the Philippines.
Okay, Philippines.
I think it was the Philippines, but one of them had a delightful like cantaloupe drink that basically like they finely shred the cantaloupe like little shoestrings,
mm-hmm.
and they soak it in water and add a couple different other flavor components. And it's the most, I don't even like cantaloupe that much. And it's the most goddamn refreshing thing I could have drank in the middle of a hot afternoon in late August, you know? Like, that would be great to bottle and put in a mead.
Okay.
But that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
But so, you know, I recommend you use some things you've seen.
Right.
Like I said, raspberry, cherry, blackberry, maybe peach, but you're pushing it there.
Blueberry is really good. Peaches and strawberries are in that kind of, you can find those in the frozen fruit aisle, but they are going to take a lot more fruit than berry, thick skin kind of guys.
Take your fruit and let's start with about a pound and a half.
Pound and a half.
Let's give you You know, if you want more fruit flavor, get 2 pounds in. But start with 1.5 pounds. Give it a whirl. Now, this means you're going to put whatever amount of honey you're going to put for what your percentage, but you're going to use less water. Keep this in mind. Mm-hmm. But give it a try. Just add 1.5 pounds of those fruits in with your next batch of mead. And let us know what you got.
Millimel is consistently the most popular variety of mead you see at competitions, and I think there's a really good reason for that, because, you know, that the fruit flavor, the honey flavor, they just go together so well.
Yeah. How many times do you hear about, you know, people put berries and syrup on pancakes and waffles? People put honey on fruit in parfaits. Honey and fruit go together really darn well.
It's kind of a no-brainer, yeah. And I hate to say it because it's not true, but when people hear about mead as a thing because they've not heard about mead before, they hear, hey, mead, it's this beverage made with honey. What's the automatic assumption?
It's really, really sweet.
It's really sweet because honey is really sweet.
And it's not. Last episode, we had dry mead. We have a dry tasting mead this round.
Right, yeah. This is a dry tasting blackberry that's actually, I can see why they're calling it semi-sweet, because it has the body, it probably has the gravity just from that, the body, the thickness of this, but it's dry.
Tastes dry.
Yeah.
And when I first started doing mead with Jeff likes dry, I like sweet. I didn't think there was a middle ground. I've learned otherwise.
The middle ground, the stuff that I like, is probably more off dry than dry. And it's ranging into semi-sweet, depending on the fruit, depending on the flavor. When it comes to fruity meats, I can handle a semi-sweet really well.
Yeah.
The trick is, so many people make a fruit mead cloying that
they make it candy sweet.
It's just not good when it's that sweet. You know, you got to find the balance, and the balance is different from one person to another.
And it's also different from one fruit to another.
Oh, so true. So, you know, what I find cloying may be, you know, delightful to Chris or to, you know, somebody else.
I've actually made a candy sweet pomegranate for a friend, and it was too sweet for me. She thought it was wonderful. Enjoy.
Diabetes in a bottle, my lady.
Yes, absolutely. Here comes the diabetes train. I'm jumping on. Oh, my gosh. But it's what she wanted, and I made it. It's not a problem.
Yeah, well, it's kind of different strokes for different folks, but, you know, I think, again, this is one of those things where you have to start somewhere, and we get to refining those recipes and figuring out what we like, and maybe you do like 2 pounds of blackberries in a mead.
In a gallon of mead.
Right. I've heard a number of people say, hey, you know, I put 2 pounds of raspberries in a mead, and it was too goddamn tart. It was just like an acid bath down my throat, and it burned the whole way down. Maybe. I kind of like an acidic mead a little bit. You know, give me a sweet tart.
Yeah.
I'm generally okay with those.
But by the same token, if you don't like that, tweak your recipe.
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about. You know, find out what you want. Now, we've talked about this. If it's too tannin, adjust the tannin. If it's too sweet, adjust the sweet. The three pillars are the tannin, the sweet, and the... can't remember now. Who's talking about?
We just talked about it with the raspberries. Acid.
Acid. Gee, me, Christmas.
Come on, man.
2 glasses of mead in, and I can't even think about mead. Anyway. but
large no. Bottles.
Yeah, bottles about empty. But the acid, the tannin, and the sweet. If one is overpowering, adjust the other two.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to see what you need to do. Mathematically and logistically, a little bit, you need a little bit of work.
And, you know, sometimes the hardest part for me is just motivating myself to do it for the third or the fourth time. Like, this isn't quite the amount of blackberry that I want in this, or this isn't quite the right amount of sweet. I've got to make another batch of blackberry, and I want to do something different, and I just want to make 6 batches of blackberry anymore. And
if you ever get to that point, let me know. My daughter still has her bullwhip. Anyway, we used to do Renaissance Valley. My daughter loved the bullwhip, so she still has hers. I want to make that clear there.
That could be taken very wrong.
Yeah. But I want to make that very clear very quickly. But
that was not meant to hurt somebody in a good way.
That was supposed to be in a bad way. Anyway,
Anyway,
very bad. Just stop it.
Well, we're getting punchy and a little sip happy here, so
I think we better call this one up here.
This is probably a good spot
to quit. Hey, happy me drinking, Jeff. Great to be here.
Yeah,
let's do this again sometime.
Lovely.
Take care.
Looking forward to it.